ask TPI leadership to introduce themselves. What you say?
Morning, colleagues and chairperson and friends. My name is Muhammad Dango. I represent Gauteng on the NCOP and on this committee. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning, honorable members and the leadership of the TTI bureaucracy. And my name is Jenny Muimau, representing Northern Cape. I'm a member of this committee.
Good morning, everybody. Good morning to you, Chair, as well. My name is Sonia Bosoff, and I represent Mpumalanga. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. My name is Brenda Matebula. I'm representing the province of Limpopo.
Good morning, Chair. This is Temi Nkosi Apleni from Eastern Cape.
Good morning. My name is Maria Solomons. I'm the committee secretary to this committee.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Ludo Musisho. I'm the colonial advisor for the committee.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Enrico Bazir, and I'm the committee assistant to this committee.
Good morning, colleagues and members. I'm Shimara Ali. I'm the procedural advisor in the NCOP.
Good morning. I'm Abdullah Hanif, the researcher.
Good morning, Chair, and good morning, honourable members. My name is Malevo Mavice Thompson from the Department of Trade and Industry. I'm the Deputy Director General responsible for industrial financing. Today I've been asked to stand in for the Deputy for the Director General, who has tendered in his apology. He's got a personal matter that he is dealing with. But the rest of the team would also introduce themselves.
Good morning, Chairperson and the honourable members. My name is Maoto Molefane. I'm from the Department of Trade and Industry. I work as a Chief Director responsible for Special Economic Zones. I'm also standing in as the Acting Deputy Director General for SEZ and Economic Transformation.
Good morning, Chairperson and Honourable Members. My name is Shabir Khan, and I'm the Chief Financial Officer at the Department of Trade and Industry.
Morning, Honourable Chair and Members. I'm Stephen Hannibal. I'm the Chief Economist at the DTI.
Good morning, Honourable Members. My name is Nontombi Matomela. I am the Acting Group Chief Operations Officer.
Good morning, Honourable Chair and Members. My name is Chipiwa Mahosi. I'm with the Department of Trade and Industry, International Trade and Economic Development Division, standing in for Ms. Greer.
Good morning, Honourable Chair. Good morning, Honourable Members of the Committee. My name is Elizabeth van Rienen. I'm Chief Director for Trade Policy and Research in the International Trade and Economic Development Division of the DTI.
Good morning, everybody. Nhlakani Ponzimali. I'm from the British High Commission.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Antonio Meto. I'm from PMG.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Lomi Vuma. I'm an independent South African citizen who's here to sit and listen in on this committee meeting, as well as an entrepreneur who has a foundation, and I'm happy to be here.
We also received apologies, one from Honourable Tim Prosser from KZN, unable to attend the meeting. Another apologies from Honourable Lydia Mshodi, since having a joint management committee meeting of the Ethics Committee. She will be joining us later. or Mr. Lund will also be joining us later. So those are the apologies. There's also an apology from the department, Director General Lionel October. I would like to tender my apologies to Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members of the Select Committee, as I will personally not be able to attend this briefing due to medical reasons. And my colleagues, Malebo, Peter Thompson, pronounce it right. Deputy Director General, Mr. Xavier Khan, Financial Officer, Ms. Nondombi Matomela, Acting Group Chief Operations Officer, and Mr. Stephen Anvia, Chief Economist, will represent the PTI at the meeting, trust the chairperson and committee will find this in order. So that is an apology. Yeah. But we're very concerned, let me say it up front, DDG. We'll be writing a letter to the minister raising a concern. With regard to annual performance plan and annual report, we want the minister or the deputy minister to come and present the APPs and the annual. Those are documents, the custodians of those documents are the ministers. The ministries should come and present those. We are flexible when it comes to any of the programs of the department. DDG responsible, say, for SEZ could come and present. We don't require a minister to come and present. He can come as part of the APP or annual report to report on all the programs. But individual programs who are flexible for the person who is responsible or even the DG could come to present a particular program of the department. But we not happy when it comes to annual performance plans and annual reports. We want the minister or the deputy minister to lead the delegation on those. What is also disturbing is that we had this program on the annual report, I think at the beginning of September. We'll give you the specific date when we write to the minister. Well, we were made aware that on the same date, the portfolio committee of the National Assembly was meeting. So the ministers or the ministry couldn't come. We had to change the date for today. But now also the ministry is not here. So that is really what is disturbing. So it gave us the impression that this house, the National Council of Provinces, is not taken serious, is undermined, and is given preference because they have 400 members, well, only 54 or 90. So it gives us that impression. But this is a general trend, not only this department, but even other departments. But even generally outside, NCOP is not even recognized. Sometimes I would say that when NA adopts a resolution on the bailout of ESCOM, it would be said Parliament has agreed to bailout of ESCOM. Parliament, not the NA. When the matter is still going to come to the NCOP, but already it's concluded Parliament has agreed. So it's a general trend of undermining the National Council of Provinces. And the departments are also guilty of that. You'll find the whole delegation going to the NA Portfolio Committee. Because we don't call departments often. You know, now that we're calling you today, I'm sure we'll call you again next year. So at least we should be given that list, because it's not like we're calling the department regularly. If I remember correctly, the only entity of the department that will be calling before the end of December will be the NEF. No other entity of the department will be called. So that's why I just decided I have not tested this with the members, but we will be writing to the minister. In fact, in the last term, when we used to commend the Economic Development Department when the minister, Ibrahim Patel, was the Minister of Economy, he was consistent in attending the select committee meetings. When we had budget vote debates, as a chair of that committee, I would mention that he and Minister Zulu, who was the Minister of Small Business Development, were consistent attending those meetings. Minister Zulu would even come with her deputy as well as the Director General, showing that she was taking the NCOP seriously. Now we're disappointed now that the minister is the minister of DTI. In fact, the minister of DTI, Robert, we've never seen in him in the committees. Then those meetings were taking place on Wednesday. We tended to be flexible because it was Wednesday, the cabinet days. But throughout the 5-year period, we've never seen him in the committee. But now I don't know. Now Mr. is Minister of DTI, he's taking, because even with the APP, when they were presented here last time, there were two deputy ministers. Both of them requested to be excused. They came then asked to be excused because there was a meeting in the National Assembly. We agreed in the last meeting when the DTI came to present. But I'm venting those because I'm frustrated because I feel that the NCOP is not taken seriously. But as I was indicating, members will be writing to the minister and raising this concern. Okay. With that, let me hand over to you, Mrs. Malebo Mapiche Thompson. I'll give you 30 minutes because of for the presentation, and then 30 minutes for questions, and maybe 30 minutes for responses. But if you can finish with the responses, we'll like those responses to be in writing, because we are still going to deal with the economic partnership agreement. That is going to be also tabled. It has some time frames as far as we understand. So that's why I'm trying to allocate the time, 30 minutes. But if you can do it less than 30 minutes, we'll appreciate that. Because we have not started exactly at 10. Because when I was calculating the time, I thought that would be starting exactly 10, so that by 10:30 we done with the presentation. From 10:30 to 11, we deal with the questions. Yeah, over to you.
Thank you, Chair. I'll try to be within the 30 minutes allocated time, or even less. The presentation, Chair, will follow the following sequence. We'll give the purpose of the department, introduction, economic overview, summary of the department's performance, and then the financial performance of 2018-19. The reason that we are here is to request the select committee to note and discuss the 2018-19 annual report of the Department of Trade and Industry. We're doing this in compliance with the PFMA, and also our report follows the guidelines as outlined by that by National Treasury, and we will then take you through the report under those principles. So in terms of the objectives of the department, the purpose of the department is to grow the manufacturing sector and to promote industrial development, jobs, and investment and exports. And we're also responsible to improve conditions for consumers, artists, and open up markets for new patent players. We're also responsible for strengthening capacity of the department to deliver on its mandate. The vision of the department is that of a dynamic, industrial, globally competitive South African economy that's characterized by inclusive growth and development, decent employment, equity, and built on the full potential of its citizens. Therefore, in striving to achieve those objectives, we are led by that vision. I'll quickly take you through the economic overview, although slightly dated. It was just aligned to the reporting period. The big issue, I think, in the reporting period is the fact that global growth has remained subdued. The forecasts in July 2019 also it had to be revised downwards by 0.1 percentage point compared to April 2019, and the economists are predicting that there are some serious downsides to global growth, and some of the reasons cited is further increased tariffs on certain Chinese imports by the U.S., the threat to global technology supply chain by the prospect of U.S. sanctions, rising geopolitical tensions, and also the issues around Brexit, erosion of business and consumer confidence are all contributing to this downside risk. I think Stephen is here today with us. For in case you may have more questions around the global overview, he will be able to provide the answers. When it comes to South African growth, it also remains fairly weak, and I think the forecasts towards the end of the year are not also as robust as we would like. The GDP fell. There's a revised GDP quarter on quarter of 3.1%, which was, I think, down from 3.2%. And the sectors that have contributed to that GDP, that have contributed to the revised economic performance where sectors such as mining, finance, trade, and manufacturing, but with the latest forecast, there has been a slight rebound. That rebound also has been led by trade, by manufacturing, and the sectors that continue to see a decline were agriculture and construction. I apologize, Chair, I'm struggling to see my own presentation on the monitor here. So, the unemployment rate worsened in quarter two, although we have seen an increasing number of persons employed by 21,000. The unemployment still increased because the people entering the market were more than what the market absorbed for the same period. Hence, the unemployment rate worsens to 29%. The sectors that have led to the increase in numbers of jobs are in manufacturing, 9,000, construction, 24,000, services, 48,000,
and also trade with 84,000. There are some sectors that have suffered job losses, and those that I think there's still a forecast that there will be further job losses just based on some of the announcements that some companies are making, those in finance, mining for the quarter in question, 36,000, transport 42,000, and private household 49,000. Then South African trade also recorded a deficit with the rest of the world, which means that we are importing much more than what we are exporting, and that in itself is a big problem and a concern for us in the department. The key sectors that contracted were in mining, the volume of mining exports, volume and value of mining of exports declined. Similarly, in agriculture and also in manufacturing. The manufacturing trade deficit widened quite considerably during this period. In quarter one of 2019, manufacturing exports contracted due to widening of the trade deficit and contracting of exports due to contraction in export volumes of cars, of transport equipment, of manufacturing and machinery and equipment, and in the agro-processing sector, it relates to foodstuffs and beverages. Then our trade surplus with the rest of the continent narrowed during this time, which meant that we were exporting much less than what we would ordinarily export, and hopefully also importing much more than what we would normally import from the rest of the continent. The continent is an important market for our manufactured products. So the decrease was by 15 billion by 15 billion. And then that was from a base of 92 billion in 2018. Then our trade with our BRICS counterparts, our trade deficit actually narrowed with the BRICS counterpart, which is a good thing in that it indicates that we are increasingly exporting more to these countries. Then our own internal targets when it comes to the areas of our responsibilities in industrial development, our strategic goal number one is to facilitate transformation of the economy to promote industrial development, investment, competitiveness, and employment creation. In the auto sector, some of the successes that we've been able to achieve is 110,000 jobs that are directly linked to the sector. Exports grew from 1% to around 10% of total goods that would be exported from that sector. Total investment in the sector also grew. And the important indicator for us is also the earnings of people in that sector, which is around 5,600 a month, much higher than many other sectors of the economy. In the automotive sector, some of the companies that we have supported include Ford Motor Companies of South Africa, Mercedes-Benz, and we were supporting them on the back of important investments that they were making. For Mercedes-Benz, they've invested around 10 billion in expansions, in a very important area of South Africa that does require jobs like many other places of the country does, is London. And based on this support, there is now a generation of suppliers that have now come into the value chain to support the production of the C-class. Then in the plastics, pharmaceuticals, chemicals, and cosmetic sectors, there are again around 500 jobs. Key achievement was the launch of Aspen, and they launched 1 billion containment facility also in the Eastern Cape in Port Elizabeth, and exports of approximately 16 million were achieved in that last financial year. In mineral beneficiation, key among the achievements was the Cisco investment that is near Cape Town. This plant is projected to create 300 direct jobs, and of those direct, including those direct jobs, over and above those, 120 indirect jobs. And South Africa still, as a sector, still remains under significant pressure with the global steel, glass, and weak local infrastructure demand posing a serious challenge. So for mineral beneficiation, one of the sectors that we are very worried about is what is taking place in the steel sector now, and the fact that our own local demand is insufficient to assist the sector to continue growing. With sugar, and in August of 2018, the minister endorsed the ITEC recommendations to increase the dollar reference pricing of sugar to 680 dollars, and there is a master plan currently being developed for sugar that will deal with the demand side issues. As members would be aware, there are a lot of there's a lot of pressure in terms of consumption of sugar and the health related concerns around sugar. And what the sugar industry in South Africa has to do is to see how they navigate those issues, and on top of that, migrate their products to areas where there is growing demand. So the purpose of that master plan is to start dealing with the challenges and the transition costs of the industry. And there is a particular concern around how that transition would also include small-scale farmers, so that we secure transformation during this transformation. Transition. And in poultry also, the poultry sector has been under pressure, and the master plan is being developed. This will address the structure of the industry, looking at issues of premium cuts and the discount cuts and grinding practices, also combining supply side measures such as investment support and assistance of new entrants with demand side measures, which will include tariffs looking at export opportunities. The concerns are still there in the industry with regards to what they would consider as dumping, and for that reason, duties on imports on whole birds have been increased to 82%, which is the maximum duty allowable under the WTO, and safeguard measures have been implemented where import surges have occurred. Then in business process services, we launched the Global Business Services Incentive in London in the last couple of months. And this is one sector that continues to grow and in many ways bucks the trend in the services sector, growing at an average of around 10.7%. It has matured from just a sector that was focused mainly on call centers, and now South Africa is being regarded as an important investment destination when it comes to financial services, when it comes to legal services, and various IT services that global companies would like done outside of their key regions. So that is an important sector for South Africa going forward, and I think for a number of provinces, Gauteng, KZN, and the Western Cape are leading provinces in this regard. But there is a growing a trend of investors now moving into the Eastern Cape, which is quite encouraging. And I think there's a lot of work that does require to be done with the various other provinces to see what niches could be explored there. This sector, in most instances, employs mainly young people. The incentive that the Department of Trade and Industry manages forces companies to employ 80% of young people in their labour force, and we've seen it as a sector from which young people can then move to other sectors of the economy. So the film sector has also become an important source of growth for the country, with every rent spent in the sector bringing economic value of around 2.89 rand in the rest of the economy. And this comes where, for example, people are shooting a movie, and because they're shooting a movie, people must be fed, wardrobes must be put together, and a lot of other infrastructural issues must be taken care of for the stage and everything else that comes with that. That is where that value would then come. And the area that we are now targeting is actually merchandising, where some of the films that have been shot in South Africa, we're looking at opportunities of the after-sale merchandising, like cups, shirts, caps, also being produced in South Africa in order to deepen the film value chain. When it comes to regional integration, members would be aware that South Africa has now signed the African Continental Free Trade Area Agreement. The African Export Import Bank and the Export Credit Insurance, ECIC of South Africa, has also signed an MOU for a $1 billion dollar financing program to promote and expand trade and investment between South Africa and the rest of the continent. So at the back of this CFTA, we now are exploring opportunities not just for export, but for export that draws, for investment that draws South African exports onto the rest of the continent. When it comes to diversifying the economy, one of our key programs there is the Special Economic Zone program. And in this program, we have now secured 10 special economic zones. Those 10 economic zones include the Kuchas, the East London, the Dubes, Maludia Pofung, Musina Makado, special economic zones, and there are a number that are already in the pipeline. I think in the next time we come to present to you, there would be at least one new one which will come on stream, whose investments are already there, they are already in place, but I can't talk about it now because it still has to follow the process that brings it to you. And once it is brought to you formally, then we will also introduce that special economic zone. And the investment there is 15.23 billion, that has been secured in the special economic zones. There's currently 14,619 breadwinners that are in this zone, and 116 investors that are in the zones. And you can note from the slide that in terms of the investment that is secured, a large part of it is already operational. So with regards to the Musina Makado, which is one of our new special economic zones, the DETI facilitated and witnessed the signing of an MOU between Musina Makado Special Economic Zone, this economic zone is in Limpopo, and 10 potential investors from China. They are coming into the country with a value of around 10 billion. The DTI, in partnership with the Chinese government, has also trained around 50 South African government officials in special economic zone planning and development. The training took place in China in May of 2018. The other important economic zones are the Gauteng IDZ. In that regard, the SEZ Advisory Board recommended the approval of the Gauteng Industrial Development Zone application, and what they were approving was the land expansion of that industrial zone to include other land parcels, given the pressure on land in Gauteng. This zone has not been able to expand as it should, because it was fairly small. Now that the land parcels have been approved, we expect that we would see a lot more investment coming out of the Gauteng IDZ. In terms of Atlantis, this was designated in May of 2018 and launched in December of 2018. Then Komasi SEZ in Mpumalanga was also designated in December of 2018. The application for Bujanala was recommended by the IDZ board, and I think there's further work that is internally being done on the Bujanala IDZ in order to make sure that that IDZ is feasible and it is not a white elephant. So when it comes to rural and township economy program, a rural and township economy summit was convened in East London in 2018. The resolutions of this summit included that government and all stakeholders need to focus on infrastructure development in order to unlock the township, the potential of the township economy. Following, I think, this conference, there has been a lot of work within the department in terms of building infrastructure in townships, in order to improve conditions for investment to locate in the township. And this is one of the programs that also informs the work that we are doing on the industrial parks. When it comes to the industrial parks, the Buthadichaba Industrial Park was launched on the 30th of October 2018. Siyabuswa, Kavom Kweni, Madadini, Ezakeni were also added to the industrial park revitalization program, which will then bring the total number of industrial parks that are revitalized to 16. When it comes to incentives, in the financial year, grants of around 7.8 billion, which constitute 88% of the support that was provided to industry, were dispersed in support of investment. This was to 793 projects, of which 82% of those projects were within level 1, 2, level 4 BEE compliance. These projects are projected to bring in investment of 31 billion, with 277 of these projects being black owned, 198 being female owned, and 22 being youth owned. We are concerned about the youth ownership in terms of the projects that we support, and similarly so we would like to increase quite significantly the number of female-owned enterprises that we are supporting. Our provincial spread, I think, confirms the industrial structure of South Africa in terms of geographic or special location of industry, with Gauteng, with North Gauteng, KwaZulu-Natal, and the Western Cape leading most of the areas where investment was supported. And we continue to worry about the scale of investment that is taking place in other provinces outside of those main three provinces, such as Limpopo in the northwest, in Free State, and also in the Northern Cape. When it comes to our work on trade, the department continues to engage with Southern African Development Community through bilateral engagement on outstanding commitments on the implementation of the free trade area. And in relation to trade in services, negotiations were concluded on four sectors, namely communication, tourism, transport, financial services. Negotiations continue in this area with regards to energy-related services and construction. There's also significant progress that has been made beyond the adoption of the legal framework to operationalize the free trade agreement. When it comes to SACU, significant progress has also been achieved on the SACU EAC negotiations, with remaining issues almost, I think, very close to finalization. When it comes to our work on trade, investment and exports, South Africa has become the fourth country to ratify the TFTA agreement and deposited its instrument of ratification in December 2018. The agreement requires 14 ratifications to come into force. Or when it comes to our exports, export sales of around 4.4 billion were recorded against a target of 4 billion. A total of 123 companies were assisted into international markets, and we have achieved an investment pipeline worth 249 billion. That investment pipeline will obviously be at different stages of realization. There may be others that are showing interest in South Africa, others that have made a decision to locate in South Africa, and others that are already on the ground in South Africa. So 49 export awareness raising and capacity building initiatives were undertaken throughout the country. 610 companies have benefited under the Global Exporter Passport Program. Incidentally, I think in the last week, the department was in Limpopo, also taking the potential exporters of Limpopo through this particular program that will then assist them to receive further support for market exposure and get their products into export markets. The DTI has the DTI Export Council has continued its engagement, which are supposed to take place on a quarterly basis, and we've assisted 644 clients with export information. What is very interesting about this area of work is the levels of interest that is growing among a number of particularly small and medium enterprises who are now getting interested in exporting their products over and above selling their products in the local market. We also see a number of new entrants that are opting for exporting their products before they even start with the local market. And what has been surprising is that they're becoming quite successful. When it comes to the work on special economic zones and economic transformation, an MOU between the DTI and CIPC was extended to allow CIPC to issue the certificates to exempt micro enterprises through self-service terminals. The national BEE Rural and Township Economy Summit was also held on July in July in 2018, and in March of 2019, the department submitted the final amendments to the BEE statement 000 for the minister to approve and then facilitate for gazetting. Then on the YES initiative, which is a presidential initiative, there's been a commitment of 522 million in relation to youth that would be employed by companies in response to that YES initiative. And since 2018, around 15,715 jobs have been created. When it comes to legislation, which is another important area of the department, a number of educational and awareness campaigns were convened by the department around some of our key legislation. And the DTI also concluded three research studies with regards to consumer protection and also credit. And then the National Liquor Authority facilitated the signing of guidelines for good practice to encourage companies to align their investment and practices with South African government integration and development objectives on the continent. When it comes to administration, Chair, as I'm drawing quickly to a close, one of our key priorities in the department is on ensuring that there's equality in terms of representation of women at SMS level. We have 54%. We've achieved 54% against a target of 50%, which is set nationally. When it comes to people who are living with disabilities, the department has a workforce of around 3.8% against the annual target of 3.6%. And then we continue our trend of ensuring that SMMEs, particularly creditors of our department, are paid within the stipulated time of 30 days. Our financial performance, Chair, the department has spent 99.6% of its allocated budget, with the largest chunk of that going to support investment directly in the form of the various incentives that we have in the department, and also some of the market access initiatives that the department runs. We have spent almost much of our budget. I think that the graph just seeks to show that exact point, which also explains the fact that we are using the budget as allocated to us in a manner that is responsive to the objectives of the department, and we are making sure that what has been voted for as funds to the department are actually used and not rolled back to National Treasury. So our auditors have confirmed, Chair and honourable members, that we are running a clean ship. So we've got a clean audit opinion, and this will be the fourth year running where we've received this opinion, again pointing to the fact that not only are we following processes, but we've been able to follow processes while we are achieving the objectives that are set for us. Chair, with that, thank you very much. I've tried to be within your time frame. I think I might have missed it by 5 minutes.
Thank you very much for the presentation. Members, any questions? Let me take hands. Honorable Dango, Honorable Moimark, Honorable Boshoff, Honorable Matula, Honorable Ablin, later. As all your questions, because of time, honorable members, won't have a second round. So ask all your questions.
Thank you, Chairperson. Your ruling puts me at a disadvantage. I would have come piece by piece. However, I think the question of financial services and the loss of jobs is going to be a crisis because of the technology that is now being employed by banks. Banks are not solid grey buildings any longer. They sit in wonderful spots. And you now have no need for branches. So all of those people are going to be unemployed. Has the department thought of engaging with the financial services industry to actually look at that, to see if they can't have another way of re-employing the people that are working in banks, because it's skills that we can't actually lose there. And maybe we could become the banking hub for Africa, technologically as such, and to consider that, especially with our trade agreement that goes across the continent now. I think that's the one issue. The second question for me that is worrying is the possible collapse of the industrial heartland of the country, with the power of the system going the way to in fact going. Now, I know it's not a DTI issue, but it's got an impact upon DTI. If the industrial heartland collapses and the polluters such upstream such as Johannesburg and Swani is not paying in Fulani to clean up the power of the system, it's going to create a crisis. That's true. Three is, I think, I hope Mr. Hannibal is a one-handed economist, not a two-handed economist. two-handed economists say to you on the one hand this and the other hand that. And now, I'd like to have a direct answer, not a one-handed and the other hand. What is the projection for building upon what we've got to get in industry coming into South Africa particularly? I take, for example, the import-export situation. The president may buy his suits in Salt River. If I walk into a supermarket, I will find strawberries and bananas coming from Israel. Unless we don't have banana growers in Natal any longer, I'm not too sure about that. What is the policy on that kind of import-export? Are we engaging with the large supermarkets to say to them, guys, become more patriotic, get South African things? I mean, strawberries and bananas are available in South Africa. I don't see why they should be coming from elsewhere. And these are the large supermarkets that are looking at that. Let me stop there, Chairperson. If I could have come back, I would have come back. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, the department plays a very critical role in terms of support for the black in economic empowerment and the department was silent in its presentation on the issue of the national empowerment fund. And it's an area that I would have preferred to hear something on it, particularly on its recapitalization. Is it on the agenda or is it not on the agenda? Secondly, the work on both the BBBE commission the presentation is silent on that. There has also been an issue around listing and finding solution to its challenges. What is the response? But also the work that you are doing in terms of implementation of the National Credit Amendment Act. Well, you're silent on that, and also it's on the issue of the SEZ. Particularly given the fact that it is seen as a platform to deepen industrialization. My question relates to the work that you have done with regards to the feasibility on the Upington SEZ. Is it on the agenda? I'm from Northern Cape, so I need to give responses. But we are also under your industrialization, particularly industrial parks. Is there any work that has been done on Kadu Industrial Park, which covers this financial year? Because I need to give feedback to my constituency. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Chair. I would just like to know, even though the AG gave you a keen audit, why so much on irregular expenditure and underspending for the financial year? Because I see there's an underspending of 41.5 million and then underspending of 10.4 on the SEZs and the Economic Transformation Program. Then the other thing that is of concern is that your senior managers have not submitted any performance management agreements. Is that true? Because I see it in this report here that was given to us. Some of the senior managers reported not to have submitted performance management agreements without any reasons provided. This is a bad practice that should not be accepted. The department indicated that non-compliance letters were issued and disciplinary action has been initiated. So what is the progress on that matter? And then if you could just expatiate to me or to the committee on your YES initiative. It's committed an activation of 522 million in personal income to youth that were previously unemployed. Could you possibly say to me the 15,000 plus jobs that have been created, what is the value added to those jobs that have been created? And then I'd also like to know, what the closing of the Hewlett's or some of the Hewlett's sugar factories have had on the labour market, because they spoke of thousands of jobs going to be lost. I know they are making land available and some of the companies available to our black entrepreneurs to farm these farms, but I'd just like to know what help is going to be given to them and how we're going to incorporate those that are losing their jobs and those that will remain with regard to assistance. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Honourable Matebu.
Thank you very much, Chair. Mine will be on page 26 on the training of government officials on special economic zone. I just want to know how many women were trained and how many were youth. How many youth were trained when you go for training in China? And then the second one will be on page 26. You've spoken about 610 companies that benefited from the GEPP. I also like to know how many black companies have benefited out of this program, how many are owned by women, and how many are owned by youth. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much. I also have a couple of questions to ask. Perhaps let me just explain that whether we have an APP or annual report, our officials, the researchers and content advisors, they also do analysis of your documents. So the issues that Mrs. Boshoff was referring to is in the analysis made by our staff. Don't ask you among yourself who has distributed that information. it is our information. Yeah, it is our information. So it's an analysis. Perhaps what you should be doing in future when you present to us. In each program that you're reporting on, link it to the budget. I know in your book it is linked. It will tell you how much was allocated for each program, how much was spent, underspent or overspending. It's clarified. But if you could also do that in the presentation as well, because some of the members will not have the book with them or not have perhaps had a chance to go through the book itself. So it will be easier if you are upfront on those issues. Don't give us the flowery part. But also tell us how you have spent the budget that we voted for. For me, I see there's nothing on the WTO in terms of the report. I know there's a lot that is happening. We heard yesterday that the U.S. is on the verge of collapsing the appellate body. That by the end of the year, you might not have a quorum unless other countries on their own are forcing the situation by ensuring the appointment of the judges. But then linked to that, what will be the consequences of those countries in ensuring that judges are appointed, despite the fact that the U.S. is not in support? What will be the consequences? Perhaps the chief economist could come in, or maybe any other person. On the issue of the African market, you're talking about I think 3 point something trillion. There's this African Continental Free Trade Agreement, areas agreement. My concern is I think there's a slow pace in terms of those who are endorsing the agreement within the African Union. You didn't highlight how many. I know that South Africa was the fourth to sign. I don't know how many are still outstanding, because my understanding that there are 14 that have endorsed, if I'm not mistaken. My concern, what will be the impact of other countries outside Africa having bilateral arrangements with African countries, and then by the time this is concluded, the market is saturated with products from the other countries outside South Africa, Africa, that have bilateral arrangements with each of the African countries. We keep on boasting about the fact that we've got this big market in Africa, which is around 3 point something trillion, but then we are slow in terms of ensuring that we have this agreement in place, because China won't wait for us to have this agreement. It will flood the market by the time we get there. I think Professor Jogers raised this matter yesterday, that we might not have this arrangement in 20 years to come, so we should be faster in terms of realizing it. But also, I know we'll be talking about this SACUM UK later. Currently, with regard to the EPA, the arrangement is between, I would say, SACUM and and the European Union. But now we're moving to a situation where we're going to have the arrangement between SACUM and the UK. What will be then the implication of that with regard to SACUM and EU without the UK? Whether the arrangement will still be the same, or if there is a dispute between UK and the EU, what will be the implication for SACUM there? I hope I'm clear on that. I want to come to the issue of the SEZ and the industrial parks. First of all, you just talking about the number of industrial parks, but I would like you to go further, even if it's in writing later, to update us on each of these industrial parks. What is the status of the industrial park, each one of them, and how much in each one of them has been invested by DTI, if you can give us a status. But I know, in terms of my constituency, I'm deployed in Dimbaza Forest, which is also an industrial park. I took a drive around the constituency. There's nothing that is happening there, except that there's a fencing that is taking place. So I'm raising this because I know it could be that we will be in phase one forever. There could be no progress on this. I know Dimbaza joined later, the other industrial parks before Dimbaza, but it could be that this is a situation in other provinces as well, where you are only at the phase one, just the fencing, nothing else is happening. But I want to also juxtapose this to the SEZ. In an area where you have SEZ, but also you have industrial parks. But let me also make an example about the area that I know best. In the Eastern Cape, for example, you have East London IDZ, or SEZ, because we moved from IDZ to SEZ. But also now you have industrial park in Dimbaza, which will be about less than 150 kilometers. And what is happening is that I'm told that industrial park in Dimbaza would be focusing on agro-processing. But also in East London, there's also focusing on agro-processing. Why would the investor go to Dimbaza on the issue of agro-processing when the person can just go to East London, for example, which has all the amenities accessible to the port, to the airports and all that? So I would like to perhaps, I don't know whether that perhaps could also be part of the report. To make it easier for you and also for the time, just clarify this: why would you have in the same area an SEZ? Because this is one metro, actually, Buffalo City Municipality, where you have the SEZ, but also you have an industrial park. But then there will be competition between the SEZ and the industrial park on the issue of investment. You end up having a white elephant of industrial parks. But generally, if you, as I was indicating, in all of them, if you could just, because I only know the Buffalo City one, there could be a similar situation with regard to others. They are proximity to the SEZ, and how are you going to manage the situation with regard to that? You also reported about the incentives. There's a slide on the incentives with regard to the projects, but also you have incentives in the provinces. But again, in writing, if you can give us those projects that page with regard to the project. I don't have a page with me, maybe first. I don't know which page it is. Slide 31, and the next one will be 31. Yeah, okay, let me quickly go this. Okay, that's be specific on those projects and also the areas where they are. What are those projects about? And also on the provincial performance incentives, if you can also have a breakdown, for instance, Gauteng, there's an approval of 3.6 billion. If you can be also specific about this, the where those incentives go to. Even if you give us the names of those incentives, there could be it could be automotive sector incentives, or it could be clothing, leather, textile. If you could also give us the specific names of those incentives, yeah. But if you, but for each of the provinces, there's also this issue of you talk about the 10 billion that is. The Mercedes-Benz has invested. This for me goes to the issue of whether the department has an economic strategy that is embedded. In that, whilst we're talking about this 10 billion, which we all appreciate, but there's nothing that is being done with investment with regard to the port, the Islandan port, which is used by Mercedes-Benz, I believe, is the biggest export in the country. But there's nothing that is being done with regard to investment now in the infrastructure, like the port and the logistics. So if you could, that this one, and we need a response now, not in writing. But also with the allocation to SEZ, whether we have same amount for SEZ and throughout the country, you're talking about 10 SEZ. No, we visited some SEZ also in the previous term. We were impressed what we saw in the Dube port, but we compare it with other SEZ. It gives an impression that there's no equal amount that is given to these SEZ. Others are getting a lion's share. If you could explain why there's no same amount that is allocated to the SEZ. The issue of recapitalization of the NEF, Honorable Moimanga has touched on that, because we also promised the NEF when we're visiting the Gauteng province shown projects there, because that was one of the issues that was raised. In fact, it has been raised over the years by the NEF, but since the department is doing nothing about it, so if we could get a response on those issues. I thought on the legislation and regulation, we'll talk about the, you know, in your APP last day, you indicated the legislation that you wanted to bring to Parliament, but you're silent on the on that on those legislation that you promised that you were to bring to Parliament. I know that we've as Parliament we dealt with some of them, but we don't know the status of others. Companies Act, Liquors Act for bill. I mean, Liquors Bill, Companies Bill. You're silent on those. Performance. Protection and others. You're silent on the status of those. Also on governance, there's no indication with regard whether you have MINMEC that are taking place. You know, we're starting a term now. As we start the term, there should be alignment between what the department and the provinces are doing. In the absence of MINMEC, you won't be able to have alignment. I know for a fact, I have been told by my own province, they're complaining about the fact that there are no MINMEC meetings that are taking place. Particularly in the economic cluster, not only this department, but also other departments, because you find that in the province, you have economic development, tourism, environment, but in all this, there are no MINMECs that are taking place. And this is the start of MTSF, but there's no alignment. Provinces are doing their own thing, national government is doing its own thing, so there is no alignment. So there's that concern in the provinces. Thank you very much, if you can have responses.
Thank you, Chair. As a well-trained manager from the department, I'm going to allow everyone to answer the difficult questions. I'll just pick out the easier ones to answer.
From the oversight that I thought one must raise, in our interaction with the Kuruleni, particularly around development on the Aerotropolis, one of the concerns that they raised was the fact that it looks like there's much more focus now on Dube, but you also, on slide 25, you raised the scaling up of Durban Metropolis, and the Ekurhuleni raised their concern around that. I think it's a matter that obviously in our feedback to them, so we need to probably give them feedback in terms of what is your posture on their concern that scaling up in Devon has an impact on their development. Thank you.
Okay, Chair, I think what we probably do is I'll just ask my colleagues to come in all the areas of expertise to also indicate to the Chair that the questions we can answer today we will indeed give a written a response to. But before I do that, maybe I'll just go through some of the questions. I'll start with the questions from Honourable Dango, and also to thank him for the questions. We're very worried about what's happening in the financial services sector, and in a way, that trend is not going to change to the positive. It's going to get worse in terms of people being replaced by machines. But those people have within them inherent skills that a machine does not have. The Global Business Services Incentive that I mentioned that was launched in London is meant to come and plug that gap. Most of our banks, their back office work, including IT work, is not done in South Africa. It has been offshored to various other destinations of the world, and I think there is pressure that maybe must be brought to bear as they lose jobs in one part of the value chain. Those jobs must be secured in the other part of the value chain. We started some of the discussions with the industry body in Global Business Services, BPESA, who themselves are engaging with the banks on how some of those jobs could be brought back into South Africa. It's an amazing amount of jobs that are sitting in places like India as opposed to being serviced out of here. The interesting bit is that then you have a company in the automotive sector whose IT services are being done out of South Africa, and they are telling us that $1 billion worth of export revenue they are getting from doing the work in South Africa. So if one company in the automotive sector can do that, why can't the banks do the same? So that is the discussion that is currently ongoing with some of the banks. But I do believe that whatever pressure that can be brought to bear for the banking sector to stop offshoring jobs that can be done locally would be very, very helpful.
Then I think on the issue of the Vaal River system, I'll leave that to Stephen. Also on the projections on import and export, as they were asked by Honourable Dengo. And the questions asked by Honourable Mwima on the recapitalisation of the NEF. Yes, that has been a long discussion over a long period of time. The feedback that I can probably give is that those discussions are ongoing. The difference now is that the NEF and the IDC are now under one ministry. So the decision making should, at least in theory, go far quicker than in the previous instance. What we can do, because now that is a ministry level discussion, we could also indicate to the ministry that there is an answer, and that is requested on this. On the the NEF itself and the BEE commission, much as they are part of the DTI, for example, the NEF in particular, they've got their own annual report that they produce. That is why you will hear us being quite silent about the work, similar to other agencies of the department. That would be the reason why you wouldn't have seen a lot of a report on the work that they are doing. So I think to the extent that there could be a way that some of that work can come and be presented here to close the information gap, that could be, I think, something to be considered. The other way of dealing with it is that maybe in the next presentation we just include some of the performance indicators of the agencies, so that the work of the DTI in its fullness is part of the report. I think that will also include the other agencies that were mentioned here. The other thing that we will do, I think, in writing, because I see we don't have anybody from our legislative unit, is to give you a formal feedback. I don't want to give anecdotal with relation to all the bills that were presented in the previous sitting to Parliament, where they all are, so that you've got a full status update. Maudu will take us through the Upington SEZ and Katu Industrial Development Park, and also the issue of the Ethropolis for Ekurhuleni. The one thing that I can maybe say to members is that when it comes to special economic zones, to industrial parks of this nature, we rely on the work that is also done at provincial and local government levels. So if Dube is moving fast, it's because Dube is paying attention to the priority. It's not a priority in meetings, it's actually a priority that they themselves are moving. But Maudu will give you a feedback on what we are doing with regards to this. When it comes to money, the fact that Dube is moving fast is not because less money is allocated to another province. Where we've not received a request, we can't allocate money. And in most instances, that is where the issue is. When we do receive a request for support, then there has to be things that are in place, governance arrangements in place, institutional arrangements in place, so that when we come to Parliament, we are able to report to you in confidence what the money has achieved. And in most of the instances where the SEZ, the industrial park, or even the infrastructure build of the province is not moving forward, it's really because there's very little capacity in the province. We've gone beyond sitting back and hoping the province will give something. We're now working on a model with the DBSA to see how we can proactively work with the DBSA to put some of these things to bed. Chair mentioned the fact that there is an industrial park where a fence was lodged, as an example. That was the phased approach that we were following. Right now we are trying to see whether we can't match parks with special economic zones so that the funding structure follows that. So when you go to Kuha, you see the entire industrial park. You don't see a fence, but in a pothole.
you see an entire industrial park, because that is what an investor will be looking for. So there is a review of that model in order to make sure that there's value for money. In some instances, when you do have an infrastructure build, it becomes very expensive to move to the next phase, because some of the infrastructure you've built may be open to dilapidation in the process. Mautu will give us more information on that, and then Honorable Boshoff mentioned irregular spending. Our CFO will give feedback on that, and there's on the issue of SMSs not providing their performance agreement. That is a priority for the department. What could be at issue there? It's not that the performance agreements were not provided; they were not done in time. And if they are not done in time, automatically a disciplinary process then follows that. So in all the instances where the performance agreement was not submitted in time, I think the parliamentary report is accurate that a disciplinary process would then follow. But if you look at that, you're not even talking about 95%, or rather not even 5% of non-submission. You're talking of a percentage much less, maybe I think at best nothing more than around maybe 3 or 4%, which is then dependent on various situations. So I wouldn't want it to look like the SMSs in the department are not providing, they don't contract with the department on their performance expectations. They do. We all have to contract and outline exactly what we will achieve for that year. And then on the other the issue of the Hewlett. Now that the Hewlett matter is part of the master plan, the sugar master plan that I mentioned, that is being developed to see how we can continue to have a sustainable sugar industry, given all the demand side pressures that the industry is facing. Modu will also provide to answer Honorable Machabula's question, how many people who were trained on SCZ were women and youth. And the questions of the chair around the WTO, our colleagues are here. I think they will speak to that. Suffice to say that the participation of the U.S. in that appellate body is critical. So if they don't fill that the post, then my understanding of the process is that then they wouldn't really be a quorum. My colleagues will also give you feedback on how many countries have endorsed the CFTA, and the work that we are doing now to make sure that that market is not diluted. What they are busy with now is ensuring that the rules of origin actually support us as far as that is concerned. Because if the rules of origin does not specify which countries are eligible to participate, as in where this garment is made, then we are all in trouble. So it is important that there is a clear protocol on the rules of origin that will then allow certain products to be able to qualify to get the preference in market access. But I'm sure Elizabeth would be able to speak to that. Chair, at the risk of maybe highlighting some of the discussions that we're having in the department, which have not yet come into the form of legislation, we're considering why some of these impoverished areas shouldn't automatically become special economic zones. So the concern you raised around industrial parks and special economic zones, we are saying why can't everyone be able to benefit, such that whether an investor competes and end up in this location as opposed to that location, we want them to end up somewhere. And that is now the discussion we're having, and the implication of that for the legislation, the implication of that for finances. Because what all these programs are doing is bringing down industrial infrastructure that makes it attractive for investors to come down. And why shouldn't this infrastructure be in Rampakele or wherever else, even if the apartheid special planning did not deem it fit to have an industrial park there? So those are some of the discussions that we are having on how do we build infrastructure to attract industrial development and make sure that we facilitate economic transformation. I'm not sure whether Stephen will be able to speak to the investment on the at the port, which has been a burning issue, particularly for London. They've raised it a lot. I'm asking him to talk about it wearing his hat as our cluster coordinator. I'm not sure he'll be able to speak to it. And then I think we've dealt with the issue of the recapitalization of NEF, and we will come back to you, Chair, with a written response on the MINMEX. All I can give you assurance of, as far as that is concerned, is that our Deputy Minister Gina has been around the country, and she's meeting with the MECs in the different different provinces, and the two deputy ministers have been provided responsibility over various provinces. But your specific question was whether a MINMEC is being held or not, and that we will then come back to you with a specific answer for. Steve?
Thanks, Chair. Chair, perhaps I can start by just adding to what my colleague has indicated on the financial services sector. Also to mention that as part of the Job Summit Agreement, the President's Job Summit Agreement, he now meets with the business, labor, and government constituency on the first Monday of every month. There's quite a detailed agenda for that meeting. The last meeting dealt with water and sanitation issues at quite a high level, and also the visa regime for tourists. I think in the next 2 months or so, the Vaal River issue will almost certainly be on the agenda. The retrenchment issue at a general level has also been put on the agenda by, as you can imagine, organized labor. So that is a rolling agenda that's looking at all of these issues on a consistent basis. There is a support scheme called the Temporary Employment Services Scheme. It used to be called the Training Layoff Scheme, which is to help workers who have lost their jobs as a result of changes in technology. And so I think that scheme is being reworked, recapitalized. The time frames are being shortened so that we can get support to workers much more rapidly than previously. So I think there's a little bit of progress in that area that we can point to. I should also mention that the Vaal River issue in particular has been raised by the Manufacturing Circle, who are also part of the master plan process. So we'll be having detailed discussions on that in the coming weeks, but we haven't specifically dealt with that issue just yet. Then in terms of the issue of local procurement and our trade balance, I think it's worth mentioning that when we've engaged with Pick and Pay in particular as one of the major retailers, they've indicated to us that the only time on the fruit and vegetable side that they import produce is where for seasonality reasons it's not available, because it is often much more expensive to import perishable products. So they've indicated to us that their approach is always to buy local, except where for seasonality reasons they're not able to. However, there are challenges with regard to local procurement of other products. So as honorable members will be aware, DTI has designated 24 products for local procurement. The most recent one about 3 weeks ago was plastic pipes. So all construction work now, bulk water, infrastructure, it has to be locally produced plastic pipes, which we think will plug a significant import leakage. We should also mention that as part of the master plan process on clothing and textiles, we found that right about 165,000 jobs are actually existing outside South Africa because clothing retailers import particularly fully made up clothes. So what the master plan process for the clothing and textile sector is trying to do is to find an agreement between retailers, local producers and government to say where can we localize those products, support local jobs, and where can we get retailers to commit to buying local so as to shift some of those jobs from overseas to South Africa. So far the discussions have gone relatively well, and I think our minister will be engaging on the master plan for clothing and textiles in the next couple of weeks, literally. So I think there's a little bit of progress there, but obviously we do need to keep the pressure on all of the retailers to actively look for opportunities to buy locally. If I can perhaps also just touch on the MINMEC issue. So, Chair, as you'll be aware, the MTSF has been to Cabinet Committee a week or two ago. I think it's going to the next full Cabinet meeting, and once that's approved, that will give the current administration at executive level a really clear set of interventions that have to be implemented over the next 5 years. So we will certainly take back to our Minister and DM Gina the requirement that that there's a call from the committee that we reactivate those MINMECs. We do, of course, as part of the Cabinet Lehotla, the reimagined industrial strategy was presented there so that we could ensure that there's a degree of alignment with what provinces are working on as well. And then perhaps, Chair, if I can just make a very quick comment on the sugar issue. So there is a master plan process underway there, as DG has indicated. Also just to mention that Tongaat, Hewlett in particular, is in a more difficult situation than the others because of the financial irregularities. But we are, as a department, very concerned because of the effects of drought and the health levy on the sugar industry as a whole, and that's really where the master plan is driving towards. So looking at industrial diversification opportunities, looking at whether there's anything more we can get out of the sugar tariff, and also whether there are other opportunities such as, for example, biopolymers. So we're working with our Department of Science and Innovation to look at whether there are new technologies that can be deployed in the sector to create new opportunities for sugar to be used. So there's biofuels and there's the biopolymers work that the Department of Science and Innovation is working on. So we're hoping that we can, through those initiatives, we can find a way of supporting the sugar sector. Honourable Chair, I actually can't respond to the issue on the port's investment, so if you'll allow me, we're going to get that information from our colleagues at Public Enterprises. It is part of the operation Bakisa in the oceans economy, so there is information available, but if you'll allow us, we'll do a written reply on that one in particular. Thanks.
Thank you, Honourable Chair, and good morning once again to all the members. Maybe just to add on to some of the questions that my colleagues have already responded to, one of the key things that we are facing with as we enter into a new budget cycle, so we're quite busy with the, you'll see tomorrow the Minister of Finance is unpacking the midterm budget policy statement, and the entire state is quite busy with the new budget process going forward. Mm-hmm. One of the things we are grappling with, and it deals directly with the NEF recapitalization, is that the state of the current fiscal environment does not allow us to actually enhance or expand any of our programs. And one of the things we're working with quite closely with Treasury is to find how best we actually recapitalize the NEF in the current fiscal environment. One of the key things, and one of the things that we are trying to drive as well, and maybe with your support as well, is that the economic cluster, out of the 1.4 to 1.5 trillion of government spending, only 12% comes to the economic cluster. And what we are trying to see, how do we actually broaden that pie? Because you know, if we need to drive this economy, ensure that there's adequate growth, we need to actually increase this allocation coming to the economic cluster. So as part of those broader discussions, the NEF is part of those discussions because it's quite important because NEF plays a dual role in terms of economic development but also transformation. With regard to some of the questions around the clean audit, so the Auditor General and is that their audit is regulated firstly by the Independent Regulatory Board of Auditors, but also they are regulated through the Public Audit Act. And an audit environment is very different, so they have audit standards which they need to adhere to. And one of the things that most audit firms, both internationally and South Africa, conform to is the international standards of auditing. What an audit doesn't do, it provides absolute assurance. They provide reasonable assurance in terms of because they audit through a sample, and what the audit attempts to do is provide reasonable assurance that the financial statements as a general whole are free from any material misstatements. So you, in any audit environment, you would have misstatements, which are errors in it, but if it's not material enough to impact the use of the financial statements, you can still get an unqualified audit and it could still be clean. So within this broad audit, and what the Auditor General focuses on is, first of all, is the financial statements, whether it's materially, there are no material errors on the financial statements, but secondly, also on whether the performance against its performance objective, whether it's accurate and complete, and whether there are no material non-compliance to legislation. So in that environment, we would still get a clean audit because some of the issues that the Auditor General would pick up are not material. Chairperson, the issue of performance management, and I know Malebo discussed it quite at length, but I think the key point here once again is it's regulated through the DPSA, through the Public Service Act, and the DPSA is quite punitive. If you don't actually meet certain time frames, you actually will not get a performance reward. So it's very punitive in that regard. And it further says that if you do not submit something on time, you will go through a disciplinary process. So those are some of the things that that the department will ensure it does happen. Chair, I would stop here unless there's any other further questions that I could possibly respond to at a later stage.
Thanks, Chair. I think I'm just going to add on what my colleague has said with regards to special economic zone. Maybe by starting off with the Honourable Matewula's question around the numbers. I think to date, we've trained over 120 government officials across three spheres of government. And mainly these people are young men and women. Last year alone, the number 50 there, we had over 20 people, I think 23 if I'm not mistaken, from Limpopo alone. And these were young people from the municipalities, Vembe, Makato, Mosina, Duwazi, and Skukune. And of course, we also included officials from LIDET as well as LIDA. Mainly because of the massive projects that we develop in the region, Mosina, Makato, SCZ, as well as Duwazi, SCZ. But in terms of the accurate figure around the numbers, that we can provide you with, be rest assured, we're training young people in the main. We've just dispatched another group last week on Wednesday to go and be trained again. The training is mainly about how to develop, plan and manage special economic zones. China is one of the countries that have successfully developed special economic zones where SEZs alone contribute chunk number in terms of the GDP contribution. So we think that as a country we can learn a lot from those people. The other question was around the Aratropolis. Honorable Member, it's quite true that the Dube Trade Port has developed at a very rapid pace, and it continues to do so. And it's mainly because of the capacity and the leadership at the provincial level. The DTI supports the province. They do have about think it's this year master plan that they have crafted, and they did not only craft that, but they also funded that. When DTI came in, we actually used the SCZ as a sweetener rather than the end goal. The development was provincially led. As the DG has indicated, we normally provide support where there's movement. So in Gauteng, for example, we started already. At the level of the province, the premier has spearheaded an initiative to, I'm sure you must have seen, ways that he's going to make sure that the whole province is declared as a special economic zone. So we're helping him to actualize that vision, and obviously it's not going to be literally declaring that province, but what it means is that we're going to help the province in identifying strategic regions or hubs that can drive the development of the Gauteng as a continental hub. By so doing, you may have seen in the media, last week we had a public consultation process in Silverton, Pretoria, for the expansion of OR Tambo to include the automotive hub. And that automotive hub ties up with the new approach that we are driving at the national level, where we're saying that all these initiatives must be driven through a partnership agreement between three spheres of government. So the project is spearheaded by the City of Tshwane, Gauteng Provincial Government, and the DTI. The Mayor of Tshwane, for example, is there. We have established a steering committee. All the accounting officers sit there. The city manager, director general, and the CEO of Gauteng Economic Development Agency, and the HOD. So we do hope that that is something that we could also replicate in other parts of Gauteng. For example, the next project that we're going to be working on is to ensure that we designate the Ekandastria, which is in Bronkhorstspruit. And this project is also very strategic because it links up to about three provinces and four cities, the city of Tshwane, Ekuruleni, Emalahleni, and Thembezile in the Mpumalanga side. And again, we're also working with the province to ensure that we accelerate the Tambo Springs, which is in Ekuruleni. You'll also be aware that there's also a project, a locomotive project in Ekuruleni, in the Nigel area, driven by Plaza. The Givela project is also in Ekuruleni. So those are the projects that we are driving with the province. And I'm saying deliberately the province because I think the feedback is that you need to provide to the municipalities that they need to be in charge, just like the city of Tshwane. They need to participate passively and intimately so. I mean, actively and, sorry, not passively. The other project, I think that the Honorable Mimang mentioned, it's around progress to date on the Northern Cape. In the Northern Cape, we actually have two projects. The first one is Upington Special Economic Zone that we've been working on since 2012. The project is focusing on the renewable energy technologies. We presented the application to the SCZ Advisory Board this year. But unfortunately or fortunately, it was referred back for refinement. Just because the focus has been on the renewable energy, and we all know the challenges that we are faced with, and we realize that it's going to be difficult, if not impossible, to drive the SCZ through the renewable energy alone. So we agreed with the province that let us identify alternative sectors that can help us drive this development. So we are working with the province at the moment and NIDA to ensure that we refine the business plan. But we are also agreed that while we're doing that, we're going to have parallel processes. We're going to develop it as an industrial park while working on the SCZ designation. And that would help us also to avoid a situation where we wait between the designation and actualization of investments, because we've also been criticized of having white elephants where we designate and wait for 10 years for the first investor to come in. So if we start with the industrial park, by the time we designate, we would have a massive development already underway. The second project, which is massive, is in the Namakwa area. The president went to Namakwa to launch the smelter last year, if I'm not mistaken. And part of the commitment that we made as the national department was that we're going to help Northern Cape with the designation of that area as a special economic zone using the smelter as a catalytic project. It is envisaged that the smelter, once it's operational, is going to create over 400 jobs, direct jobs. So we're also using whatever that comes out of that to ensure that we participate in the downstream activities. So it is at an advanced level. In actual fact, the team is going to India in the next few weeks to visit one of those plants in India, just to learn in terms of how we can replicate some of those activities that are happening on that side. So, yeah, the other last question, Chair, was in relation to the progress to date. I think we can spend the whole day narrating you to you the good story, the good stories that we have. But I think to save time, we'll provide you with the report. Suffice to say that there has been achievements to date. We have achieved, I think, around 50 billion to date in terms of rand value of investment. We have about 217 companies. With the job creation number, I think around 17,000, but we'll provide you with a full report. Thanks.
Chair, I'm not sure in the interest of time, I'm following time, whether the questions that were raised with regards to the WTO, the CFTA, and also the SACU EU, UK issue would not maybe be dealt with as part of the submission by our colleagues from the trade side. Thank you so much.
Okay. I think one of my questions is not answered. Because I wanted to...
On the youth employment?
No, on the companies benefited. The GEPP.
Come again?
It's on page 36. You said 610 companies have benefited under the GEPP. So my question was, how many were black companies have benefited from this program? How many are owned by women, and how many are owned by you? Yeah.
Can we ask, with your permission, that they also submit it in writing together with the other issues that we said they must submit to us, the breakdown? Yeah. All right. No, thank you for your understanding. But there has also been mention of master plans of sectors. Can we also perhaps also receive, with those that have been concluded, if we can have those sector master plans as well? Sent to us. I will appreciate that. Thank you very much for the presentation and responses to the question on the annual report. At this stage now, we'll now go to the next item, that is a presentation on the SACUM UK EPA. DDG, you'll allocate the person responsible as a leader of the delegation.
Thank you, Chair. Our colleagues from international trade side of the department will lead the discussion. I think they have a presentation that is ready for the committee. So, Elizabeth, is it you? Okay, sure.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, we've heard a lot about Brexit and we've heard about the SADC EU EPA. So in the EPA with the European Union, we of course have a legal basis for preferential trade. Now the UK is part of that, and the UK is a very important trading partner for us. If the UK leaves the EU, that legal basis will no longer exist. So the purpose of this agreement was to create largely the same legal basis in order to continue the that preferential trade.
Sorry for interrupting you. We are looking at the procedural matters for the meeting. I've just been approached by Mrs. Boshoff. She's asked to be excused. She's got another meeting. That leaves us at this stage with a bit of a problem in terms of the quorum. But as I indicated when we started members with when we started with the meeting, I indicated that Honourable Moshodi will be joining us because he had a joint men committee. So arrangements are now being made for her to join us because in the absence of Honourable Boshoff, it would mean though the presentation can be made now. But when it comes to taking a decision, we won't be able to take a decision. We need five provinces. For now, we have four provinces. But once Honorable Moshodi join us, then we'll have five provinces, with the hope that the provinces that are here will remain until we finish with the meeting. But you can continue with the presentation. We'll ask the staff to and arrange for Honorable Masudi to join us. Okay, thanks.
Thank you, Jay. I have given a very brief context. My colleague, Ms. Nikki Kruger, Chief Director for Trade Negotiations, has just been able to join us. So with your permission, I would request that she makes the presentation. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and my apologies. I was just at the portfolio committee, and we just finished. In terms of, I think Elizabeth already gave a bit of a background on this. In June 2016, the UK decided by a referendum to leave the EU. This is called, as you know, Brexit. And in March 2017, the UK officially notified the EU in terms of Article 50 of the Lisbon Treaty that they would be exiting the European Union. This gave them a period of 2 years to negotiate the terms of their exit from the UK, meaning that from the EU, my apologies, meaning that they then were set to leave the European Union at the end of March 2019. They negotiated a withdrawal agreement with the UK. This took a number of years. This agreement was finally, there was an agreement reached in the early part of 2019, January 2019. They agreed on the terms of their withdrawal. But when this was taken to the UK government or the UK Parliament, on a number of occasions the UK Parliament rejected this withdrawal agreement, and that then necessitated the UK government asking for an extension of the period for the UK leaving the EU. The new date for the UK leaving the EU was then set for the 31st of October 2019, and I think if you just look at the press, it's clear that there's still a very deep divide in the UK about this issue, whether they should leave the EU at all, or if they leave the EU, on what sort of terms should they leave the EU. This makes our relationship with the EU, with the UK, or what would be the future terms of our relationship, or under which agreement it will be governed, it makes it difficult, because it really depends on the UK's decision in terms of whether to leave the EU, when to leave the EU, and then what would be the terms of that, the EU leaving the UK leaving the EU. So what we wanted to make sure of is that whatever happens under any of these scenarios, we have the necessary agreement in place that will ensure that our trade continues as currently under any of those scenarios. So since the big issue of disagreement in the withdrawal agreement between the UK and the EU was an issue that's called the backstop, the Irish backstop. It deals with how trade will happen across the border of Northern Ireland and Ireland. That's the big disagreement in the agreement. There was an attempt to renegotiate that part of the agreement before the end of October 2019, and that way then get agreement from Parliament, the UK Parliament, that for this agreement, and then also for the terms, of course, then of their exit. What's very important in terms of the withdrawal agreement is that there's a specific provision in this agreement that once accepted, so if both parties accept it, it will provide for a transitional period, during which the UK, of course, will officially exit the EU, but there would be a transitional period until the end of December 2020, during which period the current trade agreements that the EU has in place with third countries will stay applicable to the UK. So if this withdrawal agreement is approved and the UK formally exits the EU on the basis of this withdrawal agreement, the agreement that South Africa currently has in place with the European Union will stay in place for the UK as well until 31st December 2020. So this agreement that we will be considering today will then only enter into force on the 1st of January 2021. So that is just some of the current context, and in terms of when this agreement, once agreed, will enter into force, and what sort of arrangement will govern the trade between South Africa and the United Kingdom. Since the withdrawal agreement, again, it was renegotiated, an agreement was reached with the EU on this renegotiation in terms of the Irish border on 17 October, but again, the UK Parliament did not approve the agreement, and they indicated that they want to first see legislation. They want to see the withdrawal agreement embedded into legislation that must be brought to Parliament, and then they will consider the terms. That process is still ongoing in the UK, and since there could not be an agreement on this withdrawal agreement by 19 October, the UK government was, in terms of legislation, required to request an exit again, an extension again from the EU for the exit. So the new date for the exit, the formal exit of the EU, the UK out of the EU, is now the 31st of January 2020. So we know that at least until the 31st of January 2020, the current agreement that's in place with the EU will continue to apply with the UK. Then it will depend on what's the terms of the UK's exit on the 31st of January 2020, on which agreement will then govern our relations, trade relations with the UK. There's also even some talk about a new referendum that may put in doubt if the UK will exit at all. But all of that, really, we can do nothing about as South Africa. That is what's happening between the UK and the EU, and they will need to sort this out. And then we will know what would be the terms of, we will know which agreement will apply. So that is just some background in terms of what is currently happening and why it was necessary for us to negotiate this rollover agreement with the United Kingdom. If you look at our current trade between South Africa and the UK, it is governed, as I said, by the SADC EU Economic Partnership Agreement. This agreement was entered into force on the 10th of October 2016, and the SADC EPA Group South Africa is part of the SADC EPA Group. That also contains Botswana, Eswatini, Lesotho, Namibia. Those are the other members of the Southern African Customs Union, of which South Africa is part, and then also Mozambique negotiated the SADC EPA agreement with the European Union. Under this EPA with the EU, we have fully or partially removed the customs duties for South Africa's exports to the European Union, and this still includes the EU, except on aluminium and also on some agricultural products, where either we do not have any preferential market access, or otherwise we only have certain volumes that we can export under the preference, or there's a phase down that is currently still taking place of the duties. Of course, we are giving the same sort of treatment also to European products that is exported to South Africa as part of the SACU market. What was also contained in this agreement with the EU is the specific rules of origin that applies to our trade. So if you want to have this, be able to access the preferential market access, so that lower duty, then you need to meet a specific rule of origin for different products. And this rule really defines the local content that needs to be in the product that you're exporting to the EU to be able to get the preferential access. So you can't take a product from China, bring it here, and then you export it to the EU, and then it can get the preferential access. It's to ensure that the benefits of the agreement is for the parties to the agreement. So that is the rules of origin, and this was set out in our agreement with the EU. This EPA also provided for trade remedies to address unfair trade, and it also allowed for the possibility to introduce safeguard duties. So if there's an increase of exports to South Africa from the EU on specific products, because there is now this lower duty that will apply to EU products, and that increase in exports causes problems for our domestic industry, in terms of this agreement, there is provisions that we can then increase the duty again, so impose a safeguard duty for a period of time to assist the domestic industry. So that is the agreement that we currently have in place with the EU, and the agreement that currently governs our trade with the United Kingdom. As soon as we became aware of this request from the UK that they want to exit the EU, we started discussions with the UK as South Africa, part of the Southern African Customs Union and Mozambique, to see what would be the effects of this on South Africa. And if the UK leaves and the SADC EPA UK agreement does not apply to the UK anymore, what this will mean is that the terms of our trade with the UK will change. So instead of paying the preferential duties that we currently do, so we have preferential access into the UK market, we will have to go back to the terms, the most favored nations duty. So that is the level of duty that applies to all countries. It's a higher duty than the duty that applies to South Africa, and that will have an impact on, of course, on our trade if we go back to that duty. And that is what necessitated, as I said, the negotiation of this agreement to ensure that there's no disruption in our trade. The UK is a very important trading partner for South Africa. Our trade relations with them is very extensive, as well as our investment from the UK. If you look at the current trade in 2018, the total trade, and this excludes some gold products, the total trade was over 100 billion rand. If you include gold, it goes up to about 143 billion rand is our total trade with the UK in 2018. And I think what is very important in terms of this is that there was, in the last few years, there's been a big increase in our exports to the UK, and also there's been an increase of our imports. So in 2012, we exported 56 billion. Again, this excludes gold, 56 billion to the UK, and that went up to 101 billion in 2018 in terms of our exports. And in terms of what we're importing from the UK, that also increased from 27 billion in 2012 to 56 billion in 2018. But there's as you can see from the figures, the trade balance in favor of South Africa is very big. So this is one of the positives for us in terms of this relation. So we export a lot more than what we import. The top imports from South Africa, the UK's top imports from South Africa is, of course, as I indicated, gold and platinum. That makes up more than 50% of what we're exporting to them. But very importantly, it also includes motor cars as in the top 10 exports. Motor cars, fresh fruits, including citrus, grapes, apples, pears, berries, and also wine. And it's interesting to note that if you look at the UK's imports, so their total imports from the world, 44% of the platinum that they import comes from South Africa, 22% of the citrus, 20% of grapes, 18% of apricots and peaches, 70% of apples and pears, and 5% of vehicles is originating in South Africa, and 4% of wine. So even for the UK, South Africa is a significant trading partner, and this is the reason why I think both parties put a lot of effort to try to put in place this what we will call a rollover agreement. The discussions on this started early in 2017. As I indicated, as soon as we became aware of the UK's wish to exit the EU, and what we agreed in terms of the terms of reference for this negotiations or discussions on this rollover agreement is that the main issue that we have to ensure is that there's continuity after the UK exits the EU of our trade with them through putting in place a new trade agreement or a separate trade agreement between the UK and the EU, that this discussions would be more technical exercise than renegotiating the existing terms of the agreement, and that there would be certain parts of the agreement with the EU where we'll need to make changes to make this agreement operable between the UK and the SACCO and Mozambique countries. This is a standalone agreement. So the reason as well why this was more a technical negotiations is that the UK are unable at this stage, because they are part of the EU, they are unable to negotiate new trade agreements. The only thing that they can do at this stage is they can they can take the agreements that the EU has in place and just make it standalone agreements for the UK. No new trade agreements can be negotiated legally in terms of their own domestic legislation and in terms of their relationship with the EU. So once they formally exit, they would be able to renegotiate agreement or put new trade agreements in place. So we were curtailed in terms of what we were able to do in this agreement. In terms of the SACUM UK EFTA, the negotiations took place over a period of 2 years. There were some difficult issues that we needed to resolve. And on 7 September 2019, we concluded the agreement in terms of the SACUM UK EFTA. And this SACUM UK EFTA will replace the current legal framework for our trade with the UK once the EFTA agreement with the EU does not apply to the UK anymore. And the agreement has also been set, the entering into force provision in the agreement was set out in that way, that once everyone has ratified and the EU static EFTA does not apply to the EU anymore, this agreement will automatically then enter into force. The key features of the SACUM UK EFTA is, as I've indicated before, we largely replicated the terms and provisions in the SADC EU EFTA, mutatis mutandis, and that agreement, and now the new one with the UK, will govern the rules for trade and goods, the preferential tariff rates on all sides, trade remedies, technical standards for health, or also for safety, for agricultural and industrial products and dispute settlements. So that was replicated. But there was 5 important areas where we had to negotiate new provisions, and this related to the tariff rate quotas that I will explain now. Also the sourcing of inputs from the rest of the EU into the UK production for export. So how will we treat going forward content that comes from the, or input that comes from the EU and both of our production or manufacturing issues, how we will deal with the treatment of bilateral safeguard measures, and then there was also some other transitional arrangements that we needed to put in place to make sure that there's a smooth operation of this agreement and moving from one agreement to another agreement. And then, because the UK could not negotiate a new trade agreement at this stage, we also, from South Africa's side, insisted on a built-in agenda. So there's a number of issues that we want, once the UK are able, want to discuss with them again and maybe renegotiate some of the terms of this agreement at that stage. So that is the built-in agenda, and we've set out some specific issues in that provision. So in terms of the tariff rate quotas, called TRQs in short, it's important to note in terms of this that in our negotiations with the European Union, they did not treat South Africa the same as the other countries in the region. So for the other members of SACU, so for Eswatini, Botswana, Namibia, and Lesotho, as well as for Mozambique, they offered upfront duty-free quota-free treatment on all products. So any product from these countries can be exported to the EU without paying any duty. And there's no restriction in terms of the volume that they can export. So that is duty-free, quota-free. They did not offer the same treatment to South Africa. So South Africa had to negotiate line by line in terms of tariffs. We had to negotiate on each product how the EU will treat the product. So for some products, most products, they did agree to give us the same duty-free quota free treatment, so we can export it at no duty, any volume. there was a number of products, agricultural products, where the EU indicated that we are more developed, or we are a developed country according to them. They cannot treat us the same as the other countries in Africa, and therefore they can only give us either what we will call seasonal duty. So some products we can export, but only for certain times of the year after this preferential duty. For some products they can only give us a certain volume. So for wine, for example, we can export it duty free, but only 110 million litres. So that would be the tariff rate quotas. And then on some products, they said they can't give us any preferences. So those products have been excluded from any preferential treatment. And when we export that to the EU, we will have to pay the normal duty than any other country in the world. So those terms has been transposed into the UK agreement as is, except for the tariff rate quotas. So we cannot have the same volume than we have with the EU. We could not take that same volume and have that for the UK. So we had to negotiate new volumes for these products where there's a tariff rate quota in terms of how much we can export to the UK at this lower duty. There's 13 products where we have these TRQs. As I've indicated, one of those are wine. So we had to negotiate specifically for wine, sugar, ethanol, some canned fruits, strawberries, how much we can export specifically to the UK under this preferential duty. And what we agreed with the UK is that we would look at what we currently export, so how much we currently export to the UK or the UK export to us, because we also have tariff rate quotas for UK exports to SACO. And then we will work out in terms of what they currently export and what the total of the EU export, or what we export to the EU in total. We will work out a percentage of how much of the current tariff rate quota should then be allocated specifically to the UK. Very important to note, this does not mean that what we have with the UK, EU 27, so I will call it the rest of the EU, that will not change. So the 110 million litres, for example, for wine, the 160,000 tonnes for sugar, that will stay as is in our agreement with the EU when the UK leaves. But we will now have with the UK, once they leave, in terms of this agreement, we will have a separate quota, a separate volume that we can export for wine and for sugar. Yeah. And in terms of that, if you look in terms of that means for our average increase of exports that we can export under this preferences to the EU 27 and the UK together, if you look at both volumes, there's an increase, average increase for the UK of 16% in terms of the volume that they can export. And then for the for South Africa, there's an average increase of 38%. So it's not really for the UK to export 16% more, but into our market there would be an opportunity to export 16% more in terms of the current quotas from the UK and the EU together to us. But we as South Africa are able to export to the 28 of them together now on average 38% more under these specific products. But for wine and sugar it's much higher. So for sugar there's an increase of 49%, and for wine there's an increase of 62% in terms of the total exports that we will be able to export to the UK plus then the EU 27 after this agreement enters into force. This is just an indication of what products is under the tariff rate quotas. So for the UK, they have a quota coming into the SACU market, so the Southern African Customs Union market. They have a quota on pig fat, pork, barley, wheat, cereal-based food preparations, batter cheese, and ice cream. These volumes will stay the same each year, so there's no increase for the UK. Each year, the volume stays the same. South Africa have TRQs on, as you can see, 13 products, strawberries, canned pears and apricots, peaches, canned tropical fruit, frozen orange juice, apple juice, wine, skimmed milk powder, butter, cane sugar, white crystalline powder, jams, active yeast and ethanol. And on some of those these products there would be an increase each year of the volume. So for strawberries, canned tropical fruit, frozen orange juice, apple juice and wines, each year the volume that we can export duty free will increase in terms of what we've agreed with the EU. So that deals with the preferential market access in terms of what is this duty that we will have to pay for our products that we are exporting. But linked to that, as I've indicated, there's an issue of a rule of origin. So you have to meet the specific rule in terms of how you manufacture the product or how you produce the product before you can get this preferential market access. And it really deals with how much local content you have to have in the product that you are manufacturing, that you are exporting. If you don't meet the rule of origin, you don't get the preferential market access, then you pay the normal duty. That is to ensure that the benefit stays between the parties in the agreement and the benefit doesn't go to a third party. So as I say, let's say another China or India or Russia export through South Africa to the UK and then they get the lower duty. So that will not be, that is not possible because you have to add a certain amount of value in South Africa, or for some products all value must be added in South Africa. So for agricultural products, many instances it is wholly obtained. So everything must come from South Africa. But there is a specific, not a deviation, but there's an allowance, what we call cumulation, where you can use a product from another country and it will be seen as a local product for purposes of meeting this rule of origin. So currently we can take engines from the European Union, so from Germany. We can take an engine, we can import it into South Africa, we can manufacture a vehicle, and then that engine will be seen as a South African product for purposes of meeting the rule of origin for the vehicle to be exported to the EU. So the issue that was raised by the UK, but South Africa also had similar concerns, is that many of the products that they manufacture, they use inputs from the EU, because they're very integrated in terms of their production or manufacturing. And therefore, they want to this accumulation to be extended. Once they leave the EU, they still want to be able to accumulate with the EU and then for that EU input to be seen as UK input. South Africa had the same issue, but because for some of our production, especially automotives, we have a very integrated value chain between South Africa, the European Union, and the UK. So to enable some of our vehicle exports to meet the rule of origin to go to the UK, we also have to use input from the EU that will be seen as local. So this was the issue that was debated for a long time in terms of exactly how we would be able to do this. So what we've agreed at the end, because there's still no trade agreement between the UK and the EU, and we don't know what the terms of their trade will be, is that for a period of 3 years, we will allow accumulation. So we're going to allow from both sides that we use inputs from the EU to be able to meet the rule of origin and then export to one another. And then once the UK and the EU have agreed on their trade arrangement, we will see what's the impact on this arrangement, and we can extend it or we can review it. So for the next few years, once this agreement enters into force, we would be able to use input from the EU in our production or our manufacturing then in terms of what we export to one another. Another issue was the treatment of the bilateral safeguards. As I've indicated earlier, we've put a provision in place that if there's a disturbance to our market, because of this lower duties that we are now giving to one another on certain products, and there's an increase in imports, and it causes problems, we are able to act against that. So we have currently, we have a bilateral safeguard in place under the EU EPA on poultry. So we had long discussions with the UK about how this will relate to them and whether we would be able to apply the same duty against the EU, so continue to apply the safeguard duty against imports from the EU on poultry once they leave. At the end of the long discussions, it was agreed. So going in terms of what we agreed in the agreement, that while the safeguard duty that's currently in place applies to the UK, 27, it will continue to apply to the UK. The EU 27, it will continue to apply to the UK under this agreement for that period of time, because we want to, again, we want to ensure continuity in terms of our trade, and that the same framework will apply once the UK leaves the EU. We also had to agree on a number of transitional arrangements. This was really more administrative issues, that we want to ensure that once the UK leaves and we change from one agreement, so the SADC EPA agreement, to the SACUM UK agreement, that there is no administrative problems in terms of changing from one agreement to another. You will need to get new documentation in terms of the new agreement. There's new processes that's going to apply, and that's going to take time to put in place. So a trader coming in on day one of this agreement from another agreement may have some problems, administrative problems in terms of the products. So we've agreed that for a period of time we will accept, and the UK will continue to accept as well, documentation that has been used by the EU. So if the EU have issued a certificate of origin, that's a certificate that goes with your preferential, with your products to the other market when you want to have a preference. Those certificates will continue to apply even though it's issued by the EU. They will continue to accept the SBS and CBT agreed production sites in South Africa or processes in South Africa that the EU accepts. The UK will continue to accept that for a period of time to allow them to put their own processes in place and to allow time for our manufacturers then to meet that specific standards or the SBS measures that they put in place to meet, be able to meet that sanitary and phytosanitary measures. So this is really, it's just to ensure continuity as well in terms of administratively how the agreements operate. The last issue in terms of what was for us, South Africa, very important to include the include into the agreement is the built-in agenda. So these are issues where we currently have some problems. We may have some problems currently with what we have with the EU, so, and we want to relook at those terms, or with the UK, it's issues that we may want to, specifically with the UK, want to raise, and we can't currently change anything in the agreement, because as I've indicated, this is not a renegotiation of the agreement, this is just putting the economic partnership agreement with the EU into a standalone agreement with the UK. So once the UK are able to negotiate or renegotiate agreements, there's issues that we've highlighted already that we want to discuss with them. So the one issue is about our access, our preferential access into the UK market. So the volumes of our TRQs, or whether we can get duty-free, quota-free treatment for those products, so we want to rediscuss the preferential market access. There's also, very importantly, an issue about regional accumulation. So as I've indicated, we've agreed now that for the interim, to ensure continuity, we will continue to accept UK input, EU input into our production to go to the EU, up the UK, and for the UK to export to South Africa. We will continue to accept EU content. But currently, in terms of the agreement that we have with the EU, that has now been transposed to the agreement with the UK, we cannot accumulate fully amongst ourselves in the region. So we can take as South Africa any product from Lesotho, Mozambique, Botswana, Eswatini, Namibia and Mozambique. We can take any product from them, use it in our manufacturing processes and then export it to the UK, and it will be seen as a South African product for purposes of rules of origin. However, that our neighbours are not able to do that in terms of input from South Africa. So if they are using some products in their production, some products from South Africa in their production to export to the UK and to the EU, those products will not be seen as local products for them, because South Africa does not have duty-free and quota-free treatment. So we want to make sure that we resolve this limitation in terms of how we as a region can use inputs from one another in terms of our production processes or manufacturing processes, and then exporting to the United Kingdom in future. Maybe a good example, and this is an actual example at the moment, is that Swaziland exports canned fruit under duty-free, quota-free treatment, canned fruit to the European Union. And they also export this to the United Kingdom, but they don't produce enough peaches and apricots and pears in Swaziland to be able to can. So they, instead of importing, and they used to in the past, importing that peaches and pears from South Africa and then canning it in the European in Swaziland or Eswatini and sending it to the European Union under the preferences, they are now importing those products from Greece. And then they can it in Eswatini and then they export it to the UK, for example, because they are not allowed to get it from South Africa, because we don't have duty-free treatment for peaches and pears into the European Union or into the UK. So these are some of the issues that impede really regional integration in our region, and also the development of value chains. That is something that is important for South Africa in the region, and something that we would want to address as soon as possible with the UK once they can negotiate their own agreements. The other issue is in the treatment of vehicles with engine capacity of 1,000 cc and less. So years ago, we negotiated with the European Union that they can export these vehicles to us duty-free, because there was no vehicles with 1,000 cc or less engine in. This was really truckers lawnmowers that used this sort of engines. And what has happened with the technology over the last number of years is that you get many vehicles now that has got an engine in of 1,000 cc's or less. And those are now entering the market. It's a loophole, really. It was never intended for vehicles to be able to be exported to South Africa duty-free. But that, because of this issue, that is now happening, and it's something that we're addressing with the EU, and that we will also want to address with the UK. There's also an issue on export taxes, where with the UK, EU, we've agreed that we can only have a limited number of export taxes under certain circumstances, and we would want to rediscuss this with the UK in future. There's also an issue in terms of enhanced cooperation on technical barriers to trade, and how we will deal with standards and conformity assessments and those sort of procedures. There's also an issue on GIs in terms of our wine manufacturing practices that's currently being discussed with the EU, and we will also want to continue with that discussion with the UK to ensure that we can increase and we can really maintain as well our current exports of wine to the UK. That was really the sort of changes that was made to the agreement that we have with the EU to make this a standalone agreement with the UK. So as I've indicated before, when this agreement will enter into force is uncertain. It will depend on what happens between the UK and the EU. Currently, they will exit on the 31st of January 2020. If they exit on that date without a withdrawal agreement, this agreement will enter into force then. If they exit on that date with a withdrawal agreement, then this agreement will enter into force at the end of December 2020. So, but what we want to ensure, so although we're not sure about which date this agreement will enter into force, we want to make sure that whatever happens between the UK and the EU, whether the UK exits, on what terms they exit, we have an agreement in place that will cover any of those eventualities and that will ensure that there's no interruption in terms of our trade with the EU. So in terms of this agreement and what we currently have with the EU, we will be covered whatever happened with the between the UK and the EU in terms of the exit from the EU of the UK. So we are requesting in terms of the constitution, this has to go through ratification in both houses. So we are requesting that this committee consider this agreement for recommendation for ratification. Thank you.
I'm a frustrated man as I'm sitting here. like Mr. Sache, I did read the presentation and also the statement by the minister. Otherwise, I did not read it, I would not be understanding it. Luckily, I read it, received it last week already. I know there are some changes that we made this morning. The challenge that we are having now, I had discussed this with the other committee secretary yesterday in preparation for today's meeting, that we should rearrange the agenda for this meeting, that we start with this presentation before the annual report. I wasn't aware at the time that the same presentation was being made, was going to be made in the NA. But then she told me that now the delegation from DTI will start at the NA. And the same challenge I was raising about prioritizing the NA over NCOP. Because I anticipated, because it always happens that we will start with the meeting, but towards 12 or after 12, you see people moving out to go to other meetings, party meetings, and sometimes we have difficulty even adopting the minutes, because normally minutes are the last item on our agenda. We would sometimes run out of quorum because of people are going out to attend to other party meetings. So I had that fear when I wanted us to start with this, but I couldn't go ahead then when the committee secretary told me that you were going to start at the NA with the presentation. Now we find ourselves in a situation now where we don't have a quorum. It becomes a crisis now because this has deadline, unlike other international agreements where you don't have deadlines. If you don't have a quorum, then you can meet at another time. When you have a quorum, you deal with it and you adopt it. But the challenge with this one is that we don't have a quorum. What is worse, this thing, sometimes the problem is that this thing of party-to-party relations is a problem. Because other parties, when they see that the governing party doesn't have a quorum, then they would make sure that intentionally they would just march out so that, but this one is it's a nationally important issue. It's not a party issue. It's an issue that will benefit the whole country. It doesn't benefit the governing party. But I know in the past, I'm not saying now this is intentional, because people that have apologized, they say they're going to party activities. But I know in the past, people would, even before they started the meeting, when they would count and say, okay, the governing party doesn't have enough numbers, just go out so that the meeting does not even start. But I'm not saying those who have left now are doing it intentionally to sabotage this process. But what we can do now, honorable members, is to convene a special meeting tomorrow, with your permission, Chair. I know there's another select committee meeting tomorrow, but same membership. We convene a special meeting tomorrow that started at 10. Unfortunately, we will make sure that we have a quorum. Even if we get alternates, there are alternates to this committee that have been 80 seats. So we'll get those alternates to be part of the meeting tomorrow. Unfortunately, you have to start the presentation afresh, but you'll have to do it now. I'll let you do it because I was anticipating, because I was communicating with the WIPAR to make sure that you would get alternates of the provinces that are not here. So I was praying that you continue with the presentation until those alternates come in. And unfortunately, you finish with the presentation and there are no alternates. It left us here now with a situation where, because of the urgency of the matter, otherwise, we could say we deal with it next week, because our next meeting is on Tuesday. It's the select committee on Tuesday. But that Tuesday will be after the 31st of October, unless there are now new developments with regard to that particular deadline. Then we'll have to then convene it normally on Tuesday. Perhaps maybe let me give you the opportunity.
Thank you very much, Chair. There's indeed been new developments. So the EU and the UK this morning agreed to extend the deadline for the UK's exit, or the formal exit of the UK, until the 31st of January. So the UK was set to exit on the 31st of October, and this agreement had to be in place then by the 31st of October to ensure that there's no problem in terms of our trade if they exit without an agreement. But with this extension that has now been agreed until the 31st of January, we do have a bit more time. So if you want to consider it next week, there would be time to do that. We want to finalize it as soon as possible, the ratification, because we have to go through domestic processes to put everything in place for implementation. By the 31st of January, but there is a bit more time. So I'm in your hands, whichever suits. Yeah.
Actually, I think you've assisted us a great deal. Perhaps when you were starting, you could have mentioned it. I wouldn't have been so frustrated. Honorable Dango, Honorable Moima.
Yeah, President, we have a joint meeting tomorrow morning. Can we suggest that we put this as the first thing on the agenda? We all know the contents of the agreement. I don't think anybody's unfamiliar with it. We've read about it. So if we can do the adoption tomorrow morning, first thing in that meeting, if the two chairs agree, and the members agree, I would suggest we do that.
So now that we have enough time, we're not really under pressure, but we can agree that next Tuesday we will finalize it. Next Tuesday, so that we also don't put pressure, because we're going to put pressure now on this other committee. You remember how long it took for the presentation? We started just after 12, and now it's after 1, so it took like an hour. So meaning that we will be eating an hour out of the time of tomorrow's committee meeting. So now that at least there are new developments, I suggest Comrade Dango, Honorable Dango, that we defer this issue to next week, Tuesday. And we'll make sure that we have a quorum, we speak to the Chief Whip, to whip members to ensure that they attend the meeting next week, Tuesday. Agreed? Thank you very much. Honorable Rapley?
No, thanks, Chair. No, Chair, I do think that I was becoming a little bit offended with your remarks. I do not think, in fact, on our side as an EFF, I do not think that it was deliberate for the members to leave this meeting. We do not have, as you may know, that we do not have any agreement with any other party. We are an independent organization which operates on its own. So that insinuation must end here. It was just it's a coincidence that we have a meeting. I'm rushing to it now. We have a meeting of an organization, not because there was any deliberate move to sabotage this meeting. Thank you very much.
I appreciate that, Honorable Applin, but it was just my experience in the previous term. I appreciate your commitment. It gives me confidence that in future, even when the governing party doesn't have enough numbers, and if your organization is around, so we'll continue with the meeting. Yeah. Thank you very much. Just a minute, honorable members. There's a program for the committee that ends on up to the 3rd of December. So you can have a look at the program, but what is important also in the program is that I think the week of the 12th, I'm not having a program with me now, the week of the 18th to the 22nd of November was originally meant for the NCOP taking the parliament to the people in Gauteng, but we understand that the program is no longer taking place. We have a bill from the DGI, the National Gambling Amendment Bill. We already received a briefing. What we need to do now is to ensure that in terms of the processes, we go back to our provinces and brief the provinces on that particular bill. We'll be doing that with the delegation from DTI. They will, as soon as we confirm the dates, so we must link up with our liaison officers at Constitutional House, as well as members can also communicate directly with the chairpersons of the portfolio committees that are responsible for economic development, so that we conclude dates for the presentation, but it will be that week of the 18th to the 22nd of November. Any date that you conclude with your PLO and perhaps the chairperson of the portfolio committee in the province, make sure that it is communicated to the communities, to the committee secretary, so that the committee secretary then advise the department DTI, so that DTI then also dispatch officials to that meeting, because they are the one mainly who would be presenting the bill. So that they have to be there as well to assist members. So I just wanted to indicate that so that it is not late to report it in the formal meeting next week, so that we start now to communicate with our provinces about what is a suitable date within that week of the 18th to the 22nd of November. So we can even start today to start communicating, but make sure you involve the PLO in the Constitution House, and also possible though, your provincial chairperson of the committee that is responsible for economic development. Thank you very much, Honourable Members. Meeting adjourned.